Shalom, y'all. I used to say good day all the time, but my wife said, Derek, you're not Australian, so find something else. So shalom, y'all, is what it's going to be from now on. Brethren, come back with me in time to the time when Israel was liberated from Egypt, and they went out with a high hand. Then project ourselves forward 40 years. We've been wandering in the wilderness. 40 years, many people have died. A new generation has grown up. We're about to enter the promised land. Led and directed by God, Moses calls the 12 tribes together. And he gives them the Ten Commandments again, the second time round. We're now in Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy means the second giving of the law. And in Deuteronomy 5, Moses firmly sets out what those commandments are. And then in chapter 6, he addresses a very, very important principle. Let's turn over there. Chapter 6 of Deuteronomy. Chapter 6 of Deuteronomy and verse 1. Deuteronomy 6 verse 1. It says, referring to obviously the chapter before, he says, now these are the commandments, the statutes and the judgments, which the Lord your God commanded you to teach you, that you might do them in the land where you're going to possess it. Verse 2, that you might fear the Lord your God, to keep all his statutes and his commandments, which I command you, you and your son's son, all the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged, that you might live happy, long, fulfilled life with all your family, and that all your family might hear and understand the importance of living according to these commandments. Verse 3, hear therefore, O Israel, and observe to do it, that it may be well with you, and that you might increase mightily, as the Lord of God of your fathers has promised you, in the land that flows with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one Lord. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. So those first five verses there really set it up. But notice the next couple of verses here, verse 6 to 9. Notice these words especially. Verse 6. And these words which I command you this day shall be in your heart. Not just in your mind, not something that you just hear, not something that goes in one ear and out the other ear, but something that in your heart becomes a part of you. Verse 7. What will you do once you've got these words in your heart? Verse 7 says, and you shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up, when you get in your car on the way to school, when you sit at the breakfast table and eat your breakfast cereal, when you get in the car and come to Sabbath services, when you get home at the end of the day, when you go for a walk together, when you play some sport together, when you play some games together, you shall teach them diligently, it says, verse 7, to your children. And verse 8, and you shall bind them for a sign on your hand, and they shall be frontlets between your eyes. And you shall write them on the posts of your house and on your gates. It's clear from this that it should be obvious that God's commandments are a way of life that we're living. It should be obvious to all those around us. And if it's obvious to all those around us, it should be 1,000 times more obvious to our children who live with us every day. It should be obvious that in our hearts are those commandments, and that we have such a close relationship with our God that we fear nothing because we know He's with us, that we are full of joy because we know that there's great hope for all mankind. All of that should be really obvious in the way that we're living. A sign on our hand, a sign between our eyes, on our doorposts. It should be really obvious. Brethren, as a church, we are shifting right now from the traditional Sabbath school approach, the Sabbath school format, to a parents first model for youth instruction. And we're very excited about this. We're excited about this new model because it has potential not just for influencing and helping grow our children, but really because it's part of a much broader goal of creating an environment for growth in the church. Because it's not really just, you know, parents first that this is getting at. Certainly parents first is a major focus. But every single one of us in the congregation has an opportunity to play a role in this very important shift to really try and become Deuteronomy 6 driven in the way that we teach the next generation. So it's a really exciting opportunity, and I hope that as we take a little bit of time now and give you some insights into the new program and the approach, that you'll get excited together with us about this, and that you'll be able to really help us and put your shoulder to the wheel with us to get this off to the right start and to keep it going as it continues to mature and develop. Because it does represent quite a big change in emphasis, and you'll see that as we go through some of the material. Why did God want the Israelites to teach their children? So before we really dive into some of that material and the differences, let's answer that question first, shall we? Why did God want the Israelites to teach their children? In some of the verses that we went through, there's a hint of it, but let's keep reading. Let's keep reading in Deuteronomy 6 and verse 10. Remember that they were about to enter the promised land. And in verse 10 it says, "And it shall be when the Lord your God shall have brought you into the land which he sware to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob, to give you great and goodly cities, which you built not, and houses full of good things, which you filled not, and wells digged." You didn't have to dig those wells, they're already there for you. "And vineyards and olive trees, you didn't plant any of them. When you shall have eaten and be full, then beware. Beware lest you forget the Lord, which brought you forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage." Yes, that took 40 years ago. That took place 40 years ago. Your fathers came out. You're now the children about to enter into this promised land. And how short our memories are as human beings. Beware. In verse 13, "You shall fear the Lord your God and serve him. You shall swear by his name. You shall not go after other gods or the gods of the people around you. For the Lord your God is a jealous God, lest the anger of the Lord be kindled against you and destroy you from the face of the earth." This is why God wanted the Israelites to teach their children. He didn't want them to forget. He wanted them to remember that he wanted a special relationship with this nation. That he had a great plan that he was working out with them. And that they were the apple of his eye. Drop down to verse 24. And the Lord commanded us to do all these statutes, to fear the Lord our God, for our good always, that he might preserve us alive as it is this day. Going back up to verse 21. Then you shall say to your son. Verse 20. Deuteronomy 6, verse 20. When your son asks you in time to come, saying, what mean the testimonies and the statutes and the judgments which the Lord your God has commanded you? Then you shall say to your son, we were Pharaoh's bondmen in Egypt, and the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand, and he showed us signs and wonders and great and sore upon Egypt, upon Pharaoh and all his household before our eyes. And he brought us out from thence that he might bring us in to give us the land which he sware unto our fathers. Now, how do you suppose those ancient Israelites were going to really talk to their sons about it? When their sons asked them the question, would they have simply answered with exactly these words that I've just read? Would that have made really the impact on the children? Or would they have really told a story, an animated story about what happened? Some of them were there, would have been there at the time. And they would have been able to say, the night was brilliantly lit up by the moon. We had just gone through all the households, and the Egyptians had given us, you know, a whole lot of their jewelry and things to take with us. And we were all excited. We weren't really sure what to expect. And we walked out by the light of the moon. You know, would they have really started colorfully talking about what had happened? They would have. It would have been real to them, and they would have wanted to make it real to their children. Brethren, when we have the opportunity to teach in the moment to our children, to the teens, included in the children, let's use the opportunity to really reach out with vivid descriptions, with great passion, with great enthusiasm, with great joy about the fantastic things that God has done for ancient Israel and for modern day Israel. In particular, bring it right close to home, what he's done for us before our children were born even. Some of the things that happened in our lives. Do we take the opportunity to really spend that time and make God real through relating our experiences? This is really what this is talking about. This is talking about such an important role that a parent plays in the lives of their children, to make God real. And the whole reason why did God want the Israelites to teach their children? It's because if God's real to us, to each of us individually, and to the following generations, then we're going to follow him. We're going to follow his commands. So that's the why. Now let's think about who. Who is God talking to here? He's talking fairly and squarely to the parents. And he says that the parents have to have the message in their hearts. They've got to have the law in their hearts. When you speak from the heart, it's very different from if you're just speaking straight out of your head, or if it's just academic, opening up a textbook and reading some stuff to people. When you speak from the heart, people can sense it. It's from your heart to their hearts. Now, in the new model that the church is going to be using, the parents are the key individuals for imparting the teaching. But the parents are going to be supported by the rest of the church. There will be instructors that will assist. The instructors will mainly, though, be involved in facilitating discussions on lessons that have already been learned by the children from their parents. So, very different from the way we've done everything in the past. In the past, it used to be children would go to a Sabbath school, they'd learn a lesson, then they'd go back home with some homework, and the parents would ask them, what did they learn? This is completely putting the shoe on the other foot. Saying, no, here's the material. The parents and the children do the preparation. They learn the material. They go through it. Then they come to class. The instructors ask the question, so what did you learn? Very different. Very different emphasis. Which of those two approaches do you think is more like Deuteronomy 6? I think it would be pretty clear. Deuteronomy 6 is not saying get an army of instructors on Sabbath for twice a month to impart the lessons to your young children. That doesn't seem to fit with Deuteronomy 6. Deuteronomy 6 is talking about every day. You know, when you work, talking to your children, when they rise up, when they go to sleep, when you're walking together with them, you're teaching them. It's a very different way of thinking about this subject than we've ever done before. So the instructors really will facilitate discussion learned in the family study, and they'll support and supplement the teaching, and they'll debrief with each other to see how they can improve the discussion periods. And they'll also debrief with the parents and try and figure out, you know, is there a better way that, you know, we can work together on some of these things, accepting all the suggestions from the parents and actually having a really good two-way flow of ideas. Who else would be able to help in this? Well, the speakers are going to be given the information about what the topics are for the month that the children are going to be learning. And so, you know, if it makes sense, you know, a speaker or two might decide to take a specific aspect and specifically, you know, make their message around that. That's certainly not prescriptive that everything has to be about that from now on. That's certainly not the case, but it'll be made available, and for those who would like to perhaps take a specific aspect and talk about it, that opportunity will be there. But more importantly, when you answer the question, who is involved here, the whole congregation has an opportunity to get involved. We've all heard the term, it takes a village to raise a child. It takes a church to raise our children. It takes each of us. And this new approach gives us that opportunity. We can each pray for the success of the new model. At an absolute minimum, that's what our role could be. Absolute minimum. Pray for the success. We could pray for the children by name. We could pray for the parents by name. We can pray for the instructors. We could pray that the subject matter will be inspiring and that the parents will be able to really make it come to life. We can drop in on some of these youth instruction meetings. Anyone can drop in. It's not just for the instructor and the children. Anyone can drop in at any time to go and see what it's all about. We can befriend a teenager, learn their name, understand their interests, talk to them. Talk to them about what they're learning in the youth instruction. We can do the same with the younger children. We can tell those children interesting stories about our lives at the appropriate time that might have something to do with that particular topic. You know, how we learnt about that topic, an event, an experience that happened in our lives, from the heart, telling them about it. We can befriend the parents and ask them how youth instruction is going with them in their family. We can offer assistance in terms of providing and recommending materials, perhaps, that they could use. Or just sharing ideas, parents talking to other parents. You know, how are you finding doing this new approach, you know, in this particular topic? Have you got any ideas in terms of how to get this across? And we can all be ready to answer questions on the topic of the month. We'll publish it. We'll say what the topic is. So some of our conversation here at church could be around, yeah, that's an interesting topic. You know, I was thinking about that particular aspect. You know, have you ever thought of that? And what was God really getting at there? Or, brethren, all of that should really give us the opportunity to stir up the Spirit amongst us. Talking about God's Word, talking about things that are so precious that He's given us a command to pass it on to the next generation. And if you think about it, we are family. We are one family. We're a spiritual family. So the words in Deuteronomy 6 to the families, to the parents, to say, you know, you parents need to teach your children, is just the same to all of us as one family. Those of us who are older in the family, it's for us to teach the rest of the members of the spiritual family. Because we're all seeking to enter that kingdom of God, that great millennium, that promised land. Just as Moses was talking to those ancient Israelites at that time, there are a lot of parallels to where we are today. Teaching should be something that's done in the moment as much as possible. Now, you can only really teach in the moment if you have studied the subject and internalized it and you've got it in your heart. Because you shouldn't need to necessarily rush and grab notes and start looking things up, etc. You should be able to just talk about it. Teaching should be in the moment. Because that way you can say things at exactly the right time. Timing is everything. We all know that. Timing's everything. You don't want to be trying to cram a particular lesson or something in when it just doesn't make sense for it to be done. Not just before someone's going to bed and they're already too tired, or just before they rush out the door. Oh, come back! We gotta go through this lesson. You know, that wouldn't make sense. But how about starting the day at breakfast with some small aspect related to that topic, and just sowing it out there as a thought. Hey, I've been thinking about this particular aspect. What do you guys think? Let's think about it today, and let's discuss it tonight over dinner. Just getting people to start germinate that thought at the back of their minds. Now, I know one of the biggest problems we all have is time. How do you make time for all of this? Sounds great, Derek, but what about, when do we get time to do this? And it's true, the average time a working parent spends with pre-adolescent children is barely half an hour a day. Barely half an hour a day. A typical father and a teenager may spend no more than 3 minutes per day alone together. 3 minutes a day with a teenager, a typical father. It's impossible for parents to properly train and influence their children if they don't spend time with them. to increase the opportunities for quality communication, the kind where a parent can really talk from the heart, it's necessary to first spend some time doing something the child enjoys. So even before getting to talking about some of these key things that God is admonishing us to talk to our children about, we've got to build that relationship. If we're only spending 3 minutes a day, we're not going to have the relationship in order to be able to start the teaching. So we might need to find some time to do an activity first that the child enjoys or that the teenager enjoys. Quality time is a natural opportunity to then start talking about the things that really matter. Now, many parents are just too busy with their jobs and their careers and other pressures. They're quick to give money to things, money to their children to go and amuse themselves. Unfortunately, brethren, this is not just true of everyone out in the world. We all fall into the trap from time to time. Life's crazy. it's insane. How to hold it all together, how to have time for all these things, it is tough. Teaching values takes time. I want to read a quote here from Dr. Gary Hill, who's Director of Clinical Services at the Family Institute at Northwest University. He says, "Our increasingly competitive economy is creating an environment where mom and dad are spending longer hours at work and fewer hours with their children. What's a parent to do? You need to make time to be with your kids and make the time that you have with them really count. Make the time count. Talk to them about what's right and what's wrong and what constitutes good behavior and what doesn't. Don't let yourself get so busy that you stop having real conversations with your kids. Real, authentic conversations from the heart. Depending on their age, you may have them living in your home for just 5 to 10 years. You need to use that time very wisely. Make sure you build time into your schedule for consistent, quality FaceTime with your kids whilst they're still kids and teenagers." Very important words. Very important words for us to really take to heart. You might want to designate one evening a week for family night to explain to your children that this is time for family activities and conversations. But don't limit it to that. It really should be, as it said in Deuteronomy 6, when you rise up, when you go to sleep, when you walk in the way. What does that mean in our day and age? When you drive them to the corner to get on their school bus, or when you walk them to where they're going to get on the school bus, when you fetch them afterwards, when you go and watch their sport and talk to them after the game, when you're eating. Now, I know that in itself is sometimes a challenge. You know, how to get everyone to the table at the same time to have a meal together. Yes, it's difficult sometimes. But brethren, it's something we've got to do. Family that eats together stays together. That's real. That is real. So carefully evaluating our family activities and making sure that they present us with opportunities to talk authentically to each other. So by now you're probably asking yourself, what is different then about this? Apart from the fact that the parents are the ones that drive it, what else is different? Well, firstly, there are a number of things that aren't different, that are exactly the same. There's no need for new material. If you go on our website, the church website, There's something like 250 lessons of Sabbath for Sabbath school already. And there's something like 170 teen lessons. So we clearly don't need more material. There's a ton of material out there on the website. That's not the issue. What's really the issue is how to provide a guide, an overall guide for the parents on a series of topics with cross-references to all of that material. So that the parents can sit down at the beginning of the month and say, okay, this is the topic. Here are some of the basic kind of questions that we want to try and go through and discuss with our teens and our children. For each of those topics, let's have a look at the 250 lessons and the Sabbath school lessons and the 170 teen lessons and pull for our family the ones that particularly seem to resonate with our family and the way we think and do stuff, the areas of interest for our kids that we'd like to use as supplementary discussion material for during that particular month. So those family guides, family study guides, are the things that the church is producing. And there'll be one of those per month. Those will be released starting the beginning of November. So there's going to be one for November, one for December, etc. But they'll be released maybe the week or so before the month starts. So the parents will be able to get that study guide and go through it and do what it says in Deuteronomy 6. Put it in your heart. Study it up yourself first so that you can then be the teacher, so that you can then teach your children that topic. The other difference, the other key difference in this is going to be that it's going to be more inclusive of all age groups of children. You know, in the past it's been dwindling. The ages have been getting lower and lower and lower for Sabbath school. And people have been, well, I'm nearly that age, so that means I don't have to go to Sabbath school anymore. Well, this idea is, it's more inclusive. It's the teenagers, it's everyone. It's anyone who's still staying at home, hasn't moved out. So it's really for all age groups. So that's different. You know, parents and grandparents are all welcome to get involved directly and to come to some of the meetings. So how will these meetings work then? So a typical 4-week cycle will have one topic with a bunch of questions that the parents will study up on first. Then this 4-week period starts. During that first week, the parents are teaching the children that topic. They're not going to try and finish it all in that first week of that month, but they're going to make a start. Then we're going to have, on the second week in that 4-week cycle, we'll have the instructors on the Sabbath draw the children together and facilitate a discussion. And that's going to be a compass check. That's going to be, so what's everyone learning so far? What's the main direction that we're going in as far as this, you know, what's the main topic about, etc. Just a short meeting, just to compass check. How's it going? That's going to be the first meeting out of a four-week cycle. And that'll be roughly on the second week. Then everyone goes off and continues to go through the material. And you come back at the end of the month for the second meeting of the month where the instructor again facilitates it, and that's a complete review of all the material. But at that stage, again, it's not learning the material for the first time. It's saying, what did you learn from this? What were the things that really excited you about this? Or what were the questions that you guys had that you debated a lot about? It's going to be more a facilitating role that will be played by the instructors. So that's quite different. That's quite different from the way we've run Sabbath school in the past. It's far more inclusive, including all the teenagers as well. It's the parents doing the actual teaching, supported by the church. The church provides all the materials. The parents are free to bring any other materials they'd like. I know some of you have really got a flair for putting together great, you know, exercises for your children, etc. Encouraging that all the way, that would be a really good thing for everyone to do. But if you'd like to just use the materials that the church provides, that's also good. So that would then be the typical four-week cycle. Now, as far as the material, the actual topics that are going to be discussed, the church wants to try something whereby it'll really look to, again, you as the congregation, and in particular as the parents, to suggest topics. So as we get more and more into this, we're going to be really wanting you to come forward with topics. Now, we're going to start off with a series of topics that have already been prepared. So we've got 8 months' worth of topics already lined up. Now, we don't have to stick to all of those. We can always, you know, if some of the other topics that get raised by you seem to be, you know, something that everyone has a real deep interest in, maybe we make way, you know, and substitute some of these other ones into a nearer term topic that we focus on. So I want to emphasize that this is going to be a very much a collaborative thing. It's not a regimented, you know, these are the topics that we're doing, that's it, finished. It's not that way at all. We've got a starter set of eight topics that we're going to be using, but it's not prescriptive. We really want to have lots of participation from the parents and from the, you know, everyone else in the congregation as well. So just to whet your appetite a little bit with some of the things that are going to be part of the first 8 months, and this is a suggested list. Remember, it's a suggested list, and there are materials around this that are already developed, so it's nice, it's available. But we don't have to stick with every one of these. By the way, these eight major sort of topics are all on the theme of excuse me. Yes, I'm going to have a swig of water. Excuse me. These topics are all on the overarching theme of making God real. Making God real. So, just to whet your appetite, in November, the first one is, does God exist and where is God? That's the topic for November. And there are 1, 2, 3... 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, about 15 questions, 15 major points, each of them with some scriptures. Each of them can then be used as a basis for searching on the website to find in our existing set of material other items, other articles that could be pulled out and used as part of the discussion topics with your children. So that first one is, does God exist and where is God? The second one in December is going to be, who and what is God? So this goes into God is spirit, God is love, man looks like God, God is omnipotent, God has personality, he's got a sense of humor, etc., etc. And again, a number of scriptures and cross-references that are available. The third one in January is going to be, who is Jesus Christ? Who is Jesus Christ? What's the relationship between God the Father and Jesus Christ? What does Jesus Christ do now? What did he do? What will he do in the future? In February, it's going to be, what is God's purpose? What's the purpose for humanity? So it'll go through, what is a family? God's purpose is to have a family in the family of God. In March and April, we'll be doing Passover, Passover and Days of Unleavened Bread. In May, it'll be, who and what are angels? In June, it'll be Pentecost. And so on. So there's a lot of material that has been put together, you know, guides that people will be able to use to take this to the next level. Now, just a couple of quick things here. I know that when you hear something like this, it represents change. And change is not easy. And people tend to look at change in two ways. They either think of it in what's known as a green sheet mindset or a red sheet mindset. A red sheet mindset is one that says something like, that's not my job. I'm not a teacher. I'm not an instructor. The church needs to instruct. I'm too tired. I'm too busy. I'm not Bible literate. I don't know anything about those topics. I feel unprepared. The church needs to come out with new lessons. That would be a red sheet mindset. You know where I'm going with the green sheet mindset, right? A green sheet mindset would be saying something like, clearly Deuteronomy 6 verse 6 is telling us that we need to do something differently. This is a great opportunity for us to dive into some of this material and refresh our own memories, our own understanding of some of these topics, and to really get excited about it and put it in our hearts so that we can go out and actually make this a success. It's a great opportunity for us to talk amongst each other about ways of making this more successful. That would be a green sheet mindset. So we need to take a green sheet mindset. It's new. We're going to find that we trip up. We're going to find that certain things work really well and others work terribly. And we're going to want to, in love, talk to each other about that. It's going to be a great opportunity for us to actually go to our brother and say, hey, I don't think that particular aspect worked terribly well. Let's try it slightly differently. Here's a suggestion. Great opportunity for us to actually have that kind of interaction with each other and put into practice some of those principles of Christian living. Being patient with ourselves, being patient with each other. It'll take time for us to bed down and be refined and tweaked and refined to our specific needs. One thing is for sure, in a year's time, we'll look back on this and we'll be able to see the results. I'm sure of it. I'm absolutely sure. In a year's time, we'll look back and we'll say, wow, that was a really good change that the church recommended we take. Brethren, we're a few weeks away from the Feast of Tabernacles. We're about to enter the time that pictures the millennium, which will be the promised land that we're longing for. We're longing for it, and our children should also be longing for it. Just as the Israelites gathered before Moses to hear the second giving of the law before they crossed over the River Jordan to go into the promised land, we are in the final days before the start of a new chapter in mankind's history. We can see world events. We can see what's going on. We know prophecy. We're about to enter a new chapter. The words to the parents to teach their children in Deuteronomy 6 are just as relevant now as they were then, if not even more so. Is it possible that we've become slack in our walk with God? If so, now's the time to act. And even if we are on the ball and have been on the ball as far as working with our children and teaching them, now is the time to drive even greater excitement and enthusiasm into the way that we interact with them and paint a vivid picture for them of the wonderful future that lies before us. It takes a whole village to raise a child. It takes a whole church to raise our children. We are a family. We need to create an environment for growth. That's what this is all about. Let's enthusiastically pray for the success of this critical program, and let's do our part with great zeal. And just before I close, for those of you who haven't had a chance to pick up some of the Family Education Festival youth instruction booklets, so this is specifically talking to the parents and any of the grandparents, please make sure to come by and collect them. If you didn't get a chance to do it last week, please come by and get your copy. Again, this is specifically for the parents for the feast. So you can start applying some of this, you know, between now and the feast and during the feast as well. There's also a lot of material out on the website, so be checking that out as well. On the UCG, members.ucg.org. If you go out there and you look at the family education, then you look at festival youth instruction, that'll give you a link to a ton of really good material. So please do check that out as well. And finally then, let's embrace this change, brethren. It's a fantastic opportunity for us all to get really enthusiastic and all put our shoulders to the wheel to make this a resounding success that it should be.